From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a hotel room where an actor is pacing around preparing for the biggest night of his life. The actor, Robert, has been nominated for a Golden Globe for playing a racist police officer who shoots an unarmed black youth. He's nervous about the night, his potential speech that he would have to make if he wins a Golden Globe. He's also excited that his career seems to be taken off. But his wife, an actress named Nia, doesn't necessarily share that same excitement. What we come to learn while watching the play is that Nia doesn't totally share Robert's feeling about the role in the film. Nia's African-American, and it seems she and Robert, although married for 6 years, have not really had a meaningful conversation about race. And that's what the play Division Street aims to do, generate conversation and insight that might be uncomfortable for audiences, mostly white audiences. Division Street is the second collaboration between writer Jason Odell Williams and director Ralph Maranto at the JCC Center Stage, and it's on stage through November 17th. I had a chance to see it this past Sunday. This hour, we've invited the team behind the play to join us for a conversation about race, race relations, cultural appropriation, and which voices are elevated in Hollywood and everywhere. I'd like to welcome our guests for the hour. The playwright of Division Street's on the line with us, Jason Odell Williams. Congratulations on this, Jason. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Very good. Also with us in studio, Ralph Maranto, the director. Welcome back to you. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
And in studio, Esther Winter plays Nia, and I'm going to tell you, is a tour de force. She is truly fabulous.
Thank you so much.
It's an honor to have you. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
I cannot, because I work with him, offer the same praise for Dave Andreotta. That would look too chummy. So I'll just say Dave Andreotta, who happens to be the editor of City News, is here in studio as the actor who plays Robbie in Division Street.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Dave is also an actor. And as we know, you've been doing a lot, but this one is a different kind of play, but at the same time, Ralph Maranto, we just had a conversation with the folks at Jiva, and they're doing a show that kind of makes people uncomfortable. You're tackling this. Why this? Why now for you, Ralph?
Well, I think these are the conversations that need to be happening to be able to move things forward when you get to the race conversation. It's always awkward. You never know what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say. And so this idea that this interracial couple has gone through this part of their life not addressing the fact that they are an interracial couple until forced to, I think is a great way for all of us as citizens to be able to have that same kind of conversation.
Now, before I bring Jason in, I will say we're all going to get comfortable with being uncomfortable this hour, clumsy perhaps, and that's one of my stock and trades here. And I don't know, Esther Winter, 6 years, you know, your character Nia has been married to Robbie for 6 years. Can a couple, an interracial couple, be married 6 years and not have a meaningful conversation about race?
You know, that's a great question. I happen to be in an interracial marriage. I've been married for 26 years. So it takes me a while to think back. It would take a bit for me to remember where were we at that point 6 years in. But I will say that I think it would be difficult not to have, a meaningful conversation about race 6 years into a marriage. But, you know, people, you know, everyone's different, and I'm sure it is easy to skirt the most uncomfortable issues in a relationship because you want the relationship to work. So I can see how that could happen.
And
yeah.
You perhaps could also see that if it had been 6 years and not much of a meaningful conversation about race, it might turn into what we see on stage.
Absolutely. Especially when it's hit, you know, the couple is slammed with it like they are in the play. It's unavoidable. Absolutely.
Jason Odell Williams, you and Ralph collaborated on a successful play called Church and State that also made its world premiere at the JCC before moving off Broadway. So what led you to want to revive that collaboration for Division Street?
Well, Ralph actually worked on the first play I ever wrote called Handle with Care, and I think his theater was the third theater ever to do that, and that was, he also offered feedback with that, and so that's how sort of we ended up collaborating on Church and State. I had sent him an early draft, and then after Church and State, I think we both just kind of mutually agreed, like, if you have anything else that you're working on, send it to me. And I think I've sent him some things that he said, no, this isn't for me, but eventually this one, which actually didn't start off as the play that you saw on Sunday. It started off a very different play, but even then, in that early draft, he was like, "Yeah, let's work on it. Let's see what's up." And so we did some readings, and then he helped really develop it further. So I think that first collaboration was, as they say, the beginning of a beautiful friendship. And I hope this one is just sort of one of many more productions that he and I will work on and develop together.
I'd like to ask the two actors in studio to describe their characters, and then we'll kind of get into some of the issues that this play will bring to the stage and will frankly bring to talkbacks and conversations, which are a big part of this. I know, Ralph, you know, it's important for you to not only put on a production that's entertaining, but if you're going to ask people to think, you want to be on stage to have those conversations. When can people see Division Street?
Oh, so Division Street is on stage through the 17th on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, evenings on Thursdays and Saturdays, and Sundays at 2. This coming Sunday at 2 o'clock, we'll also be having a talk back after with the cast and with myself. So we can get not just feedback on the play, since it is a world premiere, it is a new work, we want to see what people are feeling and reacting to. But more than that, the whole play is designed to get conversations going, so we want to help spur that as well and get people getting their thoughts out there, because when they walk out of the theater, we want them to be thinking different about the issues that they saw on the stage.
David Andrietta, you play Robert. Who is Robert?
Robbie Drucker is an actor who had been grinding it out for some years, doing plays in rat-infested theaters, as they say in the show, and got his big break recently in Division Street, playing this racist cop who shoots a black kid, and is now has received some level of critical acclaim, and he, as you mentioned at the top of the show, is up for a Golden Globe. That's the backstory to his character. Who is Robbie? He is a white, suburban, sort of, milquetoast kind of kid from the suburbs, who has married Nia, an African-American woman, and he is, I think, largely oblivious to race. He says in the show that, you know, race doesn't mean anything to him, and this is a flashpoint conversation between Robbie and Nia. He is a nice person, willing to overlook and let slide by some racist tropes, I think, that, you know, come up in through the course of the show, especially when they come from an old friend, willing to overlook them until the climax of the movie, when he finally addresses these things. And you know, that's the whole, sorry, the climax of the play, when he finally addresses these things. And that's the whole point, is, you know, having this conversation and then, you know, attempting to come to some resolution. I don't know that it does, not necessarily the play doesn't come to a resolution, but this larger conversation, can things be resolved in the course of an hour and a half play? Probably not, but it certainly gives you something to think about and talk about.
That old friend is agent and manager Trey, played by Scott Adams, is that right?
That's right.
Scott, shout out, man. That's a phenomenal job. Scott had me laughing. In some ways, he's a bit of the comedic relief, but he's also brings some serious tension unintentionally to the proceedings, so he really does outstanding work. Esther Winter plays Nia. Tell me about Nia.
Nia is the wife of Robbie Drucker. She is also an actor whose star is on the decline as her husband's star is on the rise. She was very famous at some point in her career and has kind of been out of the limelight for the past few years. And she is finding herself at a crossroads when her husband's career is taking off in this particular way with this particular role. The fact that her husband is playing a racist cop who shoots a black kid, looking at what's happening in media and all around the world with people of color and how they are treated, it makes her come to terms with how does she really feel about what's happening in this country? How does she feel about her husband being famous, becoming famous for this particular role? And it comes to a head when she realizes that she can't really, she can't shake it off anymore. She can't ignore it anymore. And it makes the couple have to face some issues that they've been avoiding their entire marriage.
The entire production of Division Street is only about 80 minutes. There's no intermission. And it occurred to me sitting in the audience on Sunday, Ralph Maranta, that this is the whole scene. I mean, it's one scene, one set, right. And this is, for the most part, this is going to be it here. We're gonna tackle everything. It's the night of the Golden Globes, and they're getting dressed, they're getting ready, they're getting all sort of like deaded up and pulling the champagne out, but then these issues are coming up in conversation. How do you, as a director, make sure that if you've got a production that doesn't have multiple scenes and set changes, that it's still moves, it's got energy and pace?
Well, a lot of it comes back to the script itself. And the Church and State was very similar to that. There was really two sections to it, both of them that took place in more or less real time. And Jason has an incredible skill as a writer to be able to bring the comedy as well as the drama to it. So you are laughing one minute, and then you're insightfully looking at something the next minute. So it comes back to the writing and, of course, the performances, working with the actors to find the dynamics, to find the places. What are the high points? What are the low points? And how do we structure that in the rehearsal period? But we've had a long time to work on that with Jason over the course of the almost 2 years from the first read of the script. So by the time we get into the rehearsal room, I know the rhythms in my head of what Jason was going for, and it makes it that much easier to just sit there with these amazingly talented actors. And I know you can't say David is amazing in the show, but I will say that he is amazing in the show, and to bring out every nuance of Jason's brilliant script.
Well, I mean, I didn't expect to see Dave without pants. I will say that. But let me also say...
For, it's for like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
6 minutes. 5 minutes and 59 seconds.
Too long.
There
right.
we go. So it would be boring if I just told you that I appreciated Division Street and everyone should see it at the JCC. Let's get a little uncomfortable. Let me bring in Jason here. So Jason, as a white, as a white writer, number one... When you want to write about race and you've got not only a talent like Esther Winter, but an African-American actor like Esther, are you consulting with the cast? Are you consulting with friends? Or is this a, hey, this is the script, let's do it?
No, it's not, this is the script, let's do it. No, there is a lot of conversations. I wrote this with Esther in mind. She played Alex in Church and State. And so I knew her. I got to know her briefly through that sort of rehearsal process. And then when I started writing this play, I knew that I kind of had a youngish couple that were married. And I just thought, oh, well, I'll use Esther because she's good and I know her. And then starting from there, I thought, well, if it's Esther, then maybe we should have some conversations about race because that could also be interesting. And that was kind of the sort of the genesis of the play in a way. So very early on, she and David had both been at the very first read-throughs, and we would do the readings and have conversations, all of us. They would offer their feedback there in the room, over the phone usually because I was in New York, or over email. Ralph is talking to them separately and then talking to me. I also had sort of my kind of cast of actors here in New York, and I was asking that actress who played the role for me in all of the readings, can we say this? Is this appropriate? What do you think about this? But in sort of the larger question of, you know, and I think the play sort of deals with this too, is who gets to tell these stories? I sort of think the answer is everybody, hopefully. I understand that as a white man, you know, there's more privilege and I get more chances to tell my stories. But I think that we should all be able to put any kind of character we want in our stories. And then it's up for the audience to decide, like, whether or not it was successfully done or not. I think hopefully I'm presenting three people that we've not necessarily seen exactly like this before. I think that's what's interesting to me. I know Esther said something to me. I hope it's not sort of speaking out of school, but she said she doesn't often get to play, you know, the romantic lead. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a married couple. Although the play is about race, it's not necessarily about whether or not their relationship is a problem because they're interracial. It's about how they have dealt with it or not dealt with it. I think this award is sort of the kindling or the gasoline on the fire that has been simmering or not being dealt with. I fully understand. I think it's sort of, there's even lines about it in the play. It's a little meta where Robbie says, you know, I get it. I'm a privileged white dude and I'm talking about this stuff at the 11th hour and, you know, coming to a realization and becoming enlightened. But I think that if we only told stories about people just like us, then it's not interesting for writers and it's not interesting for audiences. So my goal is always to try and tell as much of a interesting, nuanced story with characters that I want to see And hopefully I'm getting it right, and there's no guarantee. But Esther and Ralph were very instrumental throughout the process of trying to make it so we were getting everything right.
The play is Division Street at the JCC. Esther, I want to ask a general question, then I want to get specific about what happens in this play, if we could. I would assume that you wouldn't want to be in a performance like this if you didn't trust the writer, and if you didn't also trust that you could interject and maybe make comments about the script. How much discussion did you have about the script that you saw, maybe that first iteration versus what you're now performing?
Well, I had no idea Jason was writing a play with me in mind. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the initial draft of the play, one thing that jumped out at me immediately was how much Nia sounded like me. And I remember saying to myself, was he in my head? What's going on? And it was very refreshing. I did say this to Jason, that it was one of the few times that I was reading a play where I was truly able to be myself. Just listening to her in my head, I didn't have to change how I sounded. I didn't have to change how I acted. She was very close to who I am as a person. And as an African-American actor, you don't get that a lot. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. But were there moments, though, where you're kind of going through the script and you think, I'm either not comfortable with this theme, this idea, or this actual bit of dialogue?
Oh, we absolutely had that.
We had So at the beginning of the play, you literally see like a peek into the window of the life of Nia and Robbie, and the way they interact with each other. David, help me out.
In the bedroom.
I think we can say it. I mean, they have a little scene where they kind of are a little playful with each other, where they take on a playful role of a slave and a slave master. And with that first script, I handed that page to David and to Esther, and I said, let's try this. We don't know if this is going to work. We don't know if this helps tell the story or doesn't tell the story. And we played with it until we found a way that it felt like it fit.
Like, I'm uncomfortable just even like thinking about it. But Esther, you're kind of looking at me and laughing, and we kind of exchange this little glance. What went through your mind, and how do you feel about that scene now?
Now, I'm okay with it. Initially, I was very apprehensive for many reasons. I wasn't quite sure how it was going to be received. I wasn't quite sure as far as the approach, you know, is it sexual? Is it just banter? Is it, and I have to say, you know, Dave and I, we didn't know where it was going, where it was coming from for a very long time. And we had lots of discussions about it. We voiced our discomfort in, you know, doing the scene together. But I think what it boiled down to was trust in the writing, trust in each other as actors. And once we got to that place of trust, all bets were off. We're like, let's just do it. And as soon as we were able to get to that place together on stage and during rehearsal, we don't really think about it. At least I can't speak for Dave, but I don't really think about it anymore in that sense. Like, ooh, okay, let's go. It's like, let's just do it. Let's do it. So I'm okay with it now.
No. I hear that. I mean, it was certainly a process, it sounds like. But I want to move to different parts of the play that really are kind of the core of some of the themes that the audience is going to be left with. One of them comes up, the first time I found myself in the audience going, oh, that is so true, is when I think it was the agent, I think it was Trey, who was talking about how nominations work in Hollywood.
Yep.
And he's essentially saying, well, you know how it works. You know, white people get nominated, but then there's like kind of a backlash. And then, you know, so then maybe you'll see African Americans nominated in the major categories. And then maybe there will be Asian Americans and other people, but then it's back to the white people, you know, so we're good. And I'm going, oh my gosh, like, damn, that's probably, what did you think of that, Esther?
Oh, it's spot on. Yes. I believe that 98% of this play is spot on. Everything Nia says is pretty spot on. When I was running lines with my daughter, she was feeding me the line, and I would say what I would say, and as soon as I would say it, she would say to me, everything Nia says is a mic drop. It's just, wow. And she kept saying, wow. I'm like, yeah, wow. And my challenge was to figure out a way, with Ralph's help, how to deliver this information, because it's very important what Nia says, in a way that people can receive instead of yelling, instead of shouting. However, if there's something to be said and she's angry, she says it. And I think that's just as important.
So this is where, in the spirit of being uncomfortable, I want to sort of explore what comes out of that, which is Robbie's thinking about what he might say if he wins. And he's not expected to win the Golden Globe, but, you know, he's got a speech. And there's this, you know, it's a humorous moment, but it turns into a serious moment about what he would say and just how bad his speech is. Dave does a phenomenal job of playing someone who's really tone deaf about giving a speech or not knowing where the laugh lines are.
Thanks.
Because I'm sure there's none of you in that, right?
Oh, of course not.
No, of course not. Part of the question is, you've got Robbie, who played a racist cop, nominated for a Golden Globe. If Robbie gets on stage and is going to give a speech, the question is he just going to thank everybody? Is he going to make a commentary about race? And what's interesting to me is that Nia, and I want to start with Esther on this, but I want to get everybody's take. Mm-hmm. Nia, his African-American wife, isn't really on board with him kind of making a racial commentary for a number of reasons. I want to start with why that is. Did you agree with Nia's opposition or sort of her eye rolling or et cetera on that?
As far as the speech?
Yeah, the speech.
Yes. It is a fine line when you have a person who is not of color talking about race relations and, you know, what should be said, who should say it. But I also think it's kind of a double-edged sword. If nothing's said, then people would say, why didn't they say anything? And then if they do say something, well, they shouldn't have said that.
Or they should have said something
different. So sometimes it's a no-win situation. As far as Nia is concerned, I think she's looking out for Robbie in the fact that she doesn't want him to blow it and maybe steer clear of talking about race. I think she's coming at it from not only as a fellow actor, but as his wife to, you know, maybe not say that. Maybe not, you know, just stick to what you know and maybe not go there.
Does it ring hollow to you when you see the Oscars, when you see the Golden Globes, and inevitably actors are up there making these sort of either political or social commentaries?
It honestly depends on who's saying it and what they're saying. I've seen both. I've heard speeches where, you know, I think maybe they should have second-guessed saying what they said. But many times I've heard speeches that that really rang true, and I really appreciated their points of view. And usually it's from a woman, not necessarily a woman of color, but usually it's from a woman talking about women that they work with as far as equal pay and having different races in the room with them. I don't know. So I've heard both, to be honest.
On the subject of what white male actors might say, because that's where Robbie is contemplating what he might say if he wins a Golden Globe. If there's a film like Division Street in the real world, and that's what wins, or films like it that take on, you know, racial ideas, what do you want to hear white men say on stage in Hollywood?
Wow, what a question. I want them to be true to themselves. I don't want them to say anything. And that really comes true. That comes out when in speeches, you know, if the person really believes what they're saying or if they're just trying to make sound bites. If someone is truly behind whatever they're saying, it rings true. And I think that's when it sinks in and you're like, yeah. I don't know the answer to that. I think what I would say to any white male actor is, you know, what do you really want? Do you want it to be equal? You want to be an even playing field? Then say that. And not just say it, but do something about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, those actors who have said things on the podium, they've used their platform and they've taken the time to say something on that behalf, but then they're able to follow up and do something about it. Those are the people I want to listen to.
Before I grill Dave and the rest of your colleagues on this, do you dislike the word woke?
that comes up in the play.
I think it's overused. Yeah. I think people honestly don't know what it means. I think they think they know what it means to be woke. But I don't, I believe only a few people understand what it really means, and only a few people really are.
So can I chime in on that note?
Yeah.
The first time I heard that term woke was probably about, I'm going to say about 3.5 years ago. And I was, in my capacity as a journalist, was attending some sort of seminar or media day at the local FBI offices. And agents were talking about, you know, the language that is being used on the street. And they were talking about, you know, their jobs infiltrating the bad guys, so to speak. And one of the terms that they used was woke. And they said, how many of you have heard the term woke? And, you know, a bunch of journalists in the room were like, you know, none. I'd never heard it. And I'm like, woke. Okay, I'm going to have to remember that one. It was about 6 months later that it was appropriated like everywhere. Everyone was using woke. And still think back to that. You know, as soon as the cops are onto it, then it's everywhere, and there'll be a new word coming up.
Yeah, well, and then it sort of becomes sort of an ironic or pejorative word.
Right.
But for you, your character, Robbie, is trying to be as what we might call woke, or at least enlightened as he can be in delivering this. When you're reading that dialogue and you're thinking about these various issues, I mean, you want the audience to think. What were you thinking about as you were kind of taking on this role, David?
Well, a lot of the same things that Esther was, and I do want to compliment both, everyone here at the table, including Scott, who's not here, but Esther, Ralph, and especially Ralph and Jason, because they were really shaping the play. Obviously, it's Jason's. These are Jason's words, Jason's characters, and they were really open to collaboration. And I'm not just saying that because they're here. I mean, this was an uncomfortable script to read at certain points in the reading process. And I, too, like Esther, was concerned with how it would be received, whether it was saying what it wanted to say, and, you know, raising those concerns with Ralph and Jason making adjustments to it accordingly. What, you know, one thing that in some ways I wasn't sure I wasn't sure how it was going to be received, and I wasn't sure how I even felt about some of the dialogue, but I knew that it was potentially risque and potentially, you know, dangerous, and I can't tell you how many times I turned to Esther through the course of this process and said, "Listen, are you okay with this? If you are okay, then I'm okay." Because I don't really know where I fall into that category. And when she would say, "I'm not okay," we would then share that. And when she said she was okay, I'm like, "If you're good, I trust you, then I'm good." Even though I was unsettled as to where I felt, my trust in her was paramount to everything. So that's how I got through some of the tougher parts of the play.
It's an important process. And now, Ralph, if this play follows in the path of Church and State or other productions, where do you think this can go? I mean, you got a chance to see it on the JCC stage for a few more weeks here in Rochester, but where can this go?
Well, I've already had some interest from other theaters. As JCC Artistic Director, I just spent the last 3 days in Chicago for the National Jewish Theater Conference, and we had a whole session on intercultural theater and talking about all of the dynamics of who can play what and how do we bring all of the world together through theater. And if I sat there in this session and took notes on all of the things that stood out to me that were interesting and I were to hand them to a playwright and say, "Please write a play about this," it would be Division Street. You would not believe the number of references that came up in this session that are addressed in this play. And I can't tell you how many people in that room, in the course of that conversation, used the term woke. And and almost all were white people, not entirely. There were very few people of color there. But I really wanted
to pull...
That's
a shock.
Yeah, well, there's actually one amazing artistic director of a Jewish theater who is Jewish and who is African-American. So we talked a lot about that as well. It's like, not all Jews are white people. But I wanted to steal that line that Esther has as Nia and say, first of all, I'm not comfortable with any of you people using the term woke.
That's why I asked here. Yeah. So, but Jason, if this play picks up some legs and some steam and it travels here, let's just envision a world now while we're doing the whole envisioning who's on stage winning awards thing. Let's say Division Street travels and you're winning awards. And guess what? You're a white guy on stage with another award. Is there some irony here writing a play about the tension that too many white guys are on stage winning these awards, if that's what ends up being the case in real life with you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I fully, fully understand the irony, the maybe hypocrisy, the whole sort of meta-ness of the play and me writing that kind of play. I'm fully aware of all of it. I enjoy that. I kind of revel in it. And if that's, as Nia says in the play, that those are first world white people problems. If I win an award and that's the thing I have to worry about, I'll just consult with, I don't know who I'll consult with on what I should say. I'll run it by Robbie and Nia. That's who I'll run it by. I'll run it by David and Esther and decide what to say.
He'll say it's not too pretentious coming from a white dude, which is one of the lines I have in the
I'll probably just quote Dave's final speech in the play, which is like, you know what, I'm not even going to accept this. I'm just going to leave it here on the podium and good night. That's what I would do.
And Church and State, our previous collaboration, has almost 60 productions across the country. So this play that started right here in Rochester, was developed by us, is now going to theaters across the country. And I think there's going to be a lot of interest from those theaters and others to see what's next from Jason.
And I can't believe I have to do this work for you, because Jason almost accidentally gave something away. So let me just say that if you think he just gave something away, there's a twist at the end. So don't assume you know what's going to happen in Division Street just because you listen to Connections. Yeah. I'm doing the, my God, I'm not even on your payroll, man. So one other note here, and then after our only break of the hour, I want to talk about what they're hearing in the talkbacks. I want to know what audience are saying, because I was in the audience at the JCC Sunday. It was a packed theater, 100% white that I could see. And that's fine. I understand that. But I want to know what people are talking about. But one more question for Jason, which is, in your note from the author in the program, mm-hmm. I admit, in the spirit of being honest about being uncomfortable, there's a note where you say, while my wife and I are not interracial, we are interfaith. She was raised Orthodox Jewish. I was raised Catholic. Now we're a mishmash of everything and nothing. I thought, that's a kind of a stretch to compare it to an interracial couple. I mean, I don't know that that's apples and apples. Is that fair?
No, it is. I agree. I think that was too... To me, the play is not just about race, right? It's also about a couple who are actors, right? I think Robbie and Nia are husband and wife first, and I think their race comes second. At least that's the way I think of it in their relationship, right? Their relationship is first, and one of the things they're dealing with is the, you know, right, as Esther said, you know, Nia's star is sort of on the decline, or at least it has plateaued, while Robbie's is on the rise, and my wife and I. We understand that dynamic very intimately. She is an actress and a director and producer. I was an actor and then a writer, and we get that dynamic. So I wanted to talk about that. And then in terms of the interfaith thing, it's not the same thing as race at all, but it used to be, and it just is less of a big deal, I think, now. But I will say that when I was engaged to Charlotte, I went to Israel, and her family... half of them were not happy that she was marrying a non-Jew. One of them asked me to convert. One of them accused her of being disloyal to her race. So I understand what that conversation is like. So that's why I put that in there. And also, I think specifically for the JCC audiences, it's just maybe of interest. So just a little peek behind the curtain. It was just about... just describing who I am. I think that's kind of vaguely interesting to people to just know kind of who the author is and what his background is. So I'm not, it is not, it's apples to oranges for sure, but it was more about a background of like who I am and what did I bring personally to this, the topic of this play, if that makes sense.
The playwright on the phone with us, Jason Odell Williams, his new work is Division Street, and it is on stage now at the JCC. Ralph Maranto is the director. Dave Andreatta is the actor who plays Robert in Division Street. He is a white actor, just as Dave is a white person. It's a white actor. See, clumsy. I told you. I promised. Clumsy.
Awkward.
So it's a white guy playing a racist cop in a movie, a fictional movie called Division Street, and he's nominated for a Golden Globe. And it's the night of the Golden Globes in the play Division Street. And Dave's wife is played by Esther Winter, who is Nia, a tour de force, an actor herself, and someone who is expressing some concern or skepticism on some of the themes, not just in the movie, but in the structure of Hollywood itself. So after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and talk about what they are hearing from audiences next. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with historian and author Julian Zelizer. He's a regular contributor to Here and Now, NPR, CNN, and he joins us to talk about what he's at the University of Rochester discussing today, which is the roots of the Trump presidency. He's also talking about trust in government, what impeachment means, the challenge for Democrats, and more. Julian Zelizer, historian, next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you want to see Division Street of the JCC, you've got a chance to do that, Ralph Maranto. Until when? When are the showings?
On stage until November 17th, on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
And you got a chance for at least, what, one more talk back?
Yeah, this coming Sunday we have a talk back at the 2 p.m. show where the cast and I will be on stage and answering questions and getting feedback from the audience.
I'm going to be unfair when I begin this set of questions on the talk backs, but and by no means does Esther have to share what you've heard. We were talking before the hour began off mic about some of the questions that have come up. So I'll just leave this open-ended and say to you, what have you heard in the talkbacks that stands out with the audience?
Well, I've heard from many that they appreciated what Nia says in the play and that they were able to hear what she said, more importantly. That's very important to me. As I said earlier, I was very appreciative of Ralph's direction as far as helping me shape Nia to have a nuanced performance, because it's very easy, as I said, everything she says sounds like a mic drop, which means I could shout everything that she says and I could preach everything that she says. And by the third little piece of dialogue from Nia, hearing her on stage, you would probably tune out, which is not what I wanted. So with Ralph's help, I was able to find ebbs and flows with everything that I say on stage. But one thing that did that was said during the talkback, a woman, she was complimenting me, but she said that she appreciated my portrayal of the not so stereotypical angry black woman. After I thanked her, I did say to her, well, there's a lot to be angry about. And what I wished I had added to that is for her to perhaps consider the next time she approaches or she encounters a woman of color or anyone of color that seems angry. It's really out of frustration and not being heard. I think anyone would be shouting if they didn't feel like they were being heard, if they didn't feel like what they said mattered. And that's where the quote unquote anger comes from. And to perhaps, instead of dismissing the anger that she might feel from someone of color, to ask herself, why are they angry? And to listen to what they're angry about.
So given that you've got someone who's maybe well-intended, mm-hmm. offering what they perceive to be, their own perception is it's a compliment to you. It's still a reinforcement of stereotype. How often do you find yourself moving through a world where you have to check your own, sort of demeanor or make sure that you're not perceived as the angry black woman?
Every day. Every day. Of course, different circumstances with different people and different encounters. But sure, things are said with the most, with the best of intentions every day to me. And it has to go through a filter in my head to decide, do they mean that? Am I overreacting? Am I being overly sensitive? Was that really a microaggression? Should I step back? Should I leave the room? Should I take a sip of water before I answer? Every day.
Dave, what are you noticing from the talkbacks?
Well, on that exact note, that patron who asked the question afterwards. What I appreciated about it was that her and other people who had questions, they were trying. So as clumsy, as an awkward and inarticulate as that was phrased, as Esther said, it was intended as a compliment. That much was clear. That same woman actually led off the Q&A by offering a compliment to the entire cast, and I can't recall exactly her question. But that is really the point of the show, is to have uncomfortable conversations, no matter how inarticulate and clumsy and awkward they are, that you're in a place of trust, and that when someone says something that you can be perceived as a microaggression or whatever the list that Esther just went through of, oh, how do I react? Mm-hmm. That at least you're in this place where you can have those conversations and the conversation doesn't stop. The conversation continues and we take these opportunities to enlighten each other and continue the dialogue. That, to me, was what I took from that first talk back. I'm looking forward to the next one, too, for that exact reason. You know, you need to have these uncomfortable conversations. And in fact, that's a line in the show that my character offers, is, you know, we need to have these uncomfortable conversations and get woke, using that term. I think that's what this show does. And it was evident from the talk back.
Well, and I will say that I think too often, whether it's in media or social commentary, whether you want to use the word woke or any other term that sort of means sort of enlightened to others' oppressions and struggles, we talk about it as if it's like sort of a singular destination and I'm here, but you're not. And I mean, everyone's sort of moving through the world and changing and evolving. And I do think these talkbacks are good opportunities for people to hear of other experiences and maybe absorb that. It does take an openness and a willingness to do that, though. It takes an willingness to be introspective about what you might not understand about other experiences. So, but you're creating that. Ralph, what do you hope comes out of these?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're hoping, is that when people walk out of that theater, that they are more comfortable exploring these things that they are afraid to bring up, and to bring them up in a respectful way so that we can all start moving forward. And hopefully Division Street, not just in Rochester, but eventually we'll go to other cities and those conversations will be happening across the country. We know that art can help change how people think about different situations, and that's what we're trying to do.
Jason, is there a singular theme that you want audience to leave Division Street with?
No, it's a hard question. You know, never ask a writer what his play is about. I think we never have a good answer. I think for me, you know, everything in the play that happens, I'm wrestling with myself. So these are basically just questions that I have. I think basically everything that Robbie, Trey, and Nia say at some point in my life. For me, I'm just raising a bunch of questions. And then I think what's great is, I was there on Saturday night for opening and on Sunday, the talk back. I got to hear a lot from audience members during the talk back, and then, you know, afterwards they come up privately. And I'm hearing different things from each of them. They're all getting something different. So I just hope, with all of my plays, I hope you are entertained first, and then you think about something second. And if you think about anything, whatever that brings up for you, it's a win. So whatever it brings up for you, whether it's your own personal biases you're checking, whether it's your, oh, now I'm seeing someone's point of view that I didn't understand before, or you're learning about someone in your life and now you understand them better, be based on the characters you just saw. Whatever you gain from it, if you gain anything from it, as long as, you know, you don't want your play to just be a diversion, a happy diversion, then people forget about it 5 minutes later. So I think these people left thinking about it, and that's enough for me.
And if I can add, working with Jason, what I love about his writing is that he brings a huge amount of humor into these very serious topics, and he brings a huge amount of humanity to the characters he writes. So Nia doesn't represent all black people. Robbie doesn't represent all white people. But they are an example of what's happening, and the humor that comes out of the situation and their personalities that are shown on stage allow us to really look at the issues in a way that doesn't feel like we're preaching to you as playwrights and producers.
Yeah, congratulations on creating a play where there are some parts that are obviously funny and some parts where I go, I do not know if I'm allowed to laugh at this. I don't make me laugh at this.
Good. That's perfect.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Thank you for that.
That's what we want.
That's good. That's good.
Let me read from NPR in February on diversity in Hollywood. Quote, gains have been made for women and people of color who work in movies and TV, but the numbers remain a long way from proportionately reflecting the U.S. population, according to a study from UCLA. The annual Hollywood Diversity Report looks at diversity both in front of and behind the camera. It also looks at box office and ratings. While people of color make up nearly 40% of the U.S. population, just a fraction of that number work as film writers. 12.6% of films are written by people of color. Only 7.8% of films are directed, films and TV shows, directed by people of color. The report also shows the number of female film directors nearly doubled from 2016 to 2017, but only to about 12% of all directors. So that's where things are in Hollywood. Obviously, Rochester, the JCC, I mean, there's all these different ecosystems. But, you know, Ralph, you know, you've got a lot of sway at what happens at the JCC. And what happens at the JCC sometimes launches onto a national stage.
Absolutely.
How intentional are you going to be in the future about saying, hey, the next writer is going to be a person of color? The next person, how intentional do you need to be and how intentional will you be?
I've never in the past been very intentional about that. It's just pick the play and then go from there. But as a result of working on Division Street, much more intentional now. I'm specifically looking for plays by people of color and women playwrights for next season. I was just talking to Esther about one in the car that will probably launch our season next year. I was also noting that our five shows that we have in our season this year, four of those five shows have people of color written into the storylines, and the fifth one is open to all casting options. So hopefully we're seeing a more diverse group of people on our stage and as well as backstage. And Esther is actually going to be directing at our theater next season. We'll be doing Ragtime for our big musical in the spring of 2021, and I've already asked Esther to be the director on that. So we do intentionally have a person of color directing at our season next year.
All right, and part of the reason I asked that, Esther, is because just yesterday we saw one of the new county legislators in Monroe County, Rachel Barnhart, is saying that whoever is the next county clerk, because Adam Bello is county clerk, he's going to be the next county executive, the governor gets an appointment. Barnhart is saying it should be a woman or a person of color, if not both. And it's interesting, her social media responses are people saying, well, only if you can find a qualified one. And mm-hmm. she's saying, boy, you quickly presuppose that there aren't qualified women or people of color, you know, and it's an interesting response because baked into what she is saying is, of course, there are qualified women and people of color and women of color who could do this job. Pick one. And the response of roughly half of her respondents is, well, only if you can find a qualified one. What does that say to you?
Well, it says to me that I think people need to, well, the question is, what do they deem qualifiable, or mm-hmm. what is qualified mean to them? I think people need to open their eyes to what's out there. Honestly, almost every person of color can rise to the occasion if given the opportunity. It's all about opportunity. And many times people of color aren't given that opportunity. So I agree with what Rachel said. If the opportunity arises, people will come. They are out there. It's just a matter of giving them the opportunity.
And Esther, you know, Jason says never ask a writer what the play is about. I'll give you 100 different answers. For you, what do you want audience to take from this?
I want audiences to leave the audience, leave the play talking and asking questions and looking outside of their immediate circle of friends. See, you know, who they can strike conversations up with. See, talk about topics that are uncomfortable. Bring up those subjects that you've been avoiding with your loved one or your friends and family. And talk. Just keep talking, keep the dialogue going. That's what's great about this play, as well as the play that's happening right now at Jiva, what happened at the play that just closed at Blackfriars, is making these plays are making people talk. And I think the once the dialogue starts, hopefully it continues and progress can be made from that.
And David Andrietta, 30 seconds. What do you want the audience to leave with?
I'd largely just dovetail on that. Say, I want people to talk. I want people to think. But I'd even go even further and say, I want them to sort of question themselves. I want them to look at themselves and think of times when they may have said something, done something, thought something that you know, might not be so woke. They need to get woke.
And look beyond the stereotypes. Look beyond the stereotypes.
You are, yeah. Correct.
You are so hip.
Hey, that's me. That's me, man.
That's Dave.
The great Esther Winter, Scott Adams, David Andrietta on stage with Division Street, and the writer Jason Odell Williams. Congratulations on the world premiere. Thank you for taking the time for us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You got it. Ralph Maranto, we'll see you at the JCC with this performance one more time. Until when?
On stage through the 17th, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Come see it.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dave, I'll see you around the building.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you very much. More Connections coming up.